Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Molo Sambolani, hello, how's it? And welcome to another fantastic episode of the Big Daddy Liberty Show, only on High FM. Guys, good morning, good morning, good morning. It is an interesting morning. We are now officially on level 4 lockdownistan, as I like to call it. And the president's announcement yesterday leaving a lot of us in stitches, at least towards the latter bit of it, with him struggling in a weird kind of amusing way to put on a face mask. Very cute by the president. But the message he delivered was a serious one, right? It spoke to our freedoms, what we can expect as South Africans over the next foreseeable future as the government appropriates for itself the response to COVID-19. There's a lot of stuff to unpack in that. And as always on the show, we look at the news that was this week. What made the headlines? What got you talking? What got you interested? And we look at that in the next sort of 15 minutes until we have our major feature of the show. When we speak, I have two guests today for you. Two very, very interesting guests, two chaps who I think are going to unpack a part of, or let me take two steps back in describing these two gentlemen. I think these are two guys who you need to hear from because they're going to reveal a very new but large phenomenon that we call cryptocurrency. What is it? What is the stuff that we call cryptocurrency? What is the use of it? Is it just a fad like we had, Pokemon for those who are in my generation? You know, is it like a quick fad that, you know, becomes very big and then disappears? Or is it something that we need to pay attention to? Is it the future, for instance, of finance and the like? So we're going to have that conversation, especially in the context of the socio-political crisis that we find ourselves in, where governments around the world are racking up massive amounts of spending, massive amounts of debt, and essentially on a financial economic level, you, the individual, you, the citizen, are going to have to pay or cough up your hard-earned savings to pay for this sort of levels of debt. And by the way, this is a conversation that isn't just for South Africa, but also internationally. I mean, you heard in the news segment there that a lot of the spending being driven by this COVID response is racking up massive budget deficits around the world. So this conversation is super, super important for those who want to understand exactly what they can do to perhaps safeguard their finances. So we're going to have that conversation after the main break. I'm going to take a quick break just now. And after that, when we come back, we're going to have a chat for about 10 minutes around, hey, what made the news cycle this week? What's on your mind, essentially? So, guys, remember, the show will end with me looking at what we should be expecting in the week ahead, especially as we now have these phases of lockdown. As I mentioned, we're currently in stage 4 lockdown. So I'm going to take a very quick break, and after that, we're going to have a chat about what made the news this week.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I am your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. Shabbat shalom to you all. You thought I forgot? No, I didn't. It's been very interesting for those of us who observe Shabbos, you know, to be at home and not in shuls with friends and family and, you know, a bit of a weird one, that one, which I'm still trying to get used to. But we all have to adjust, don't we, to this new current reality of lockdowns and a state of being under immense state control in terms of our freedoms of movement. And that's perhaps the conversation I'm going to be having with you in the next 10 minutes as we look at what made the news headlines over the past week. Of course, the big one, the head honcho of the headlines, was the president's announcement last night, updating us on what is essentially now a shift in strategy, according to the president, from a hard lockdown where everything is shut down, And all movement is restricted effectively, except for essential, what they call essential personnel, to now these a risk-based, what they call a risk-based assessment of how they need to respond to COVID. This risk-based assessment is reliant on what they've now created, these sort of the five categories, essentially, what they call the risk-adjusted strategy, excuse me, for economic activity. Because I think they do realize, as they've been sort of told and critiqued by opposition parties like the DA, or just the only the DA, really, and the Institute of Race Relations and Saakeliga, all these organizations which have sort of been contributing to the conversation meaningfully over the past few weeks, that you cannot shut an economy down indefinitely. It's unfeasible, and no other country in the world was doing this except us, in terms of the level of repression during the shutdown. I mean, we were telling people not to do things like be able to buy a pack of cigarettes or, you know, a bottle of kosher wine, for instance. You know, I couldn't get a bottle of kosher wine. I had to stick with the grape juice, which is fantastic, but not quite the same. And et cetera, et cetera. You know, I trivialize it, but actually it's quite serious to a large extent in terms of, you know, those serious questions being raised around, firstly, personal freedoms for individuals and our economic freedoms, which are what drive the economy. So in any event, governments moved to this new approach, which essentially prioritizes creating five levels of an alert system. I won't go through them in great detail. I mean, you'll find them on the government's website, and they are floating around on social media. But essentially, you know, we've moved to level five, which implies, if I can just get my reading glasses on, I don't wear reading glasses, but I just say this because the writing is so small. You know, level five is a moderate to high virus spread, according to this descriptor, with moderate readiness. You know, this now cites that, you know, the sectors that will be permitted will be things like all essential services plus food retail already permitted to be open, and all agriculture will be open. We have forestry, pulp, paper, mining, with them suggesting that an open cast mine can be at 100%, a deep shaft one at 50% capacity. All financial and professional services can open. Global business services, for export markets can open. The postal and telecommunication services, fiber optic, format waste, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think the implication here is, look, it's a much more open, you know, a lot more people, essentially nearly everybody can go back to work, but they'd require, obviously, you know, businesses to take necessary precautions for social distancing and the like at work. So you can expect some form of normalcy to come back to fruition, but my only issue, I suppose, with this is, and it's something I think no one's having a conversation about, for obvious reasons, is how reasonable is it really to expect a government to be able to control all of this, number one, or to even centrally plan it? I think there is an implicit assumption in, and by the way, these five levels, it all seems fantastic at face level, right? Yeah, this makes sense, but we sometimes forget the sheer lack of capacity of this government to do basic things for us to then, therefore for me to hear people assume that they'll be able to manage something as complex, as multifaceted, as intricate as this. You know, in other words, millions upon millions upon millions of economic transactions on a day-to-day basis and segment them into levels. I just don't understand how we think government is going to do this. So it might become, and this is a forecast from my part, a case of appearances versus reality and intentions versus actual outcomes. And you might find there'll be a big gulf between the two. I mean, I would have wanted to see, for instance, a risk-adjusted strategy that basically just opens the economy. but requires rather, in a legal sense, people to take precautions like masks, social distancing, et cetera, et cetera. So not to try and control everything as we're seeing here, but rather to place in place regulations that just say, if you are going to open as you should, these are the precautions you need to take. But in this instance, I don't think we're doing that necessarily. We're partially doing that, but there's an element, a large element underlying it, which suggests that government will be in a position to tell you who and who can't open and why they can't or can open. I don't think government has that capacity, for as much as it thinks it does and maybe wants to have, because politicians pine for control, whoever they are, I don't think they have that capacity. And I think it's a bit of a foolhardy thing that we might see play out here. And what's worst is, in it's not having the capacity, what governments do inevitably is they spend a lot of money they don't have, trying to hash out or trying to spend their way out of the poor capacity that I speak about. And you're seeing this in America. I mean, I'm not going to just focus on South Africa. You know, American debt right now is at record levels under President Trump. And again, it comes down to, I mean, running massive deficits as he dishes out, for example, you know, a check, a $1,200 check to every American citizen. You know, like, where's that money coming from? I mean, we're literally borrowing from our futures, our children's future in order to fund, these big spending initiatives today. And you're seeing the same thing in South Africa. Our debt at the moment stands at 4.2 trillion rands. And we've just literally ballooned it by a further 500 billion rand in these relief measures by government. Again, I know for those who are listening, you're probably thinking, oh, but what are you suggesting? That, you know, government shouldn't have done anything? No, that's not the implication at all. What I'm putting to, you know, those who listen, and essentially I hope the government would be listening, is that what you need to do is cut spending in other areas which are frivolous and unnecessary in order to prioritize spending on something like this. You can't just keep borrowing money in order to fund what can be at times unnecessary and frivolous things. And when a crisis like this comes, you then find yourself having to borrow even more in order to patch up in areas where you don't have the cash. So that's been on my mind for the past week as we look at this shift in government strategy. The underlying issues I'm watching is government debt, you know, what politicians are saying they have the power to do and versus what they actually have the capability to do. That is the two areas that I think we need to pay attention to. Guys, I'm going to go to a short ad break. And after this, I'm going to be joined by Mr. Dean Cannell and Skulk Dormel, two crypto gurus who I'll introduce properly in our major segment.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. Sorry, I was just speaking to my guest in what I thought was being off air. Welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show, the only show that brings you current affairs and everything you need to know through the lens of liberty. Just before I get to my guest, a quick reminder that to make a difference during the COVID-19 pandemic with Dis-Chem, your Dis-Chem benefit points can now go towards supporting the Independent Solidarity Fund set up by the President. Dis-Chem is matching rand for rand all points donations and will kickstart it with an upfront 2 million rand. Money is raised will go towards saving lives and assisting people in need. Donate now by converting your points via the Dis-Chem app or website. Together, we are stronger. Together, we can overcome the pandemic. Dis-Chem, pharmacists who care. Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I mentioned, after this break, I was going to have two very interesting guests, two fellows who I think you guys must hear from a lot more, especially because they are cutting their niche in a very new area, I suppose. I can call it new. It's been around for a while, but it's still new to a lot of people. The world of cryptocurrency. My two guests, of course, are Mr. Dean Cannell, who is the CEO of CoinFabric. He has about 5 years really working in the crypto space and crypto projects with institutions and governments to really help them enable strong financial inclusion through cryptocurrency. And my other guest is Mr. Skulk Dormel. Skulk is a good mate of mine and really an early cryptocurrency investor. So someone who's really spent a bit of time looking at what it is, how he can benefit from it, And the two gentlemen are on now. Let me just make sure. Skulk, hello. Are you on the show?
I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me?
Fantastic. Welcome to the show, Skulk. And Dean, do I have you on?
Good morning, Big Daddy. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, brother. Man, I'm very, very good. Welcome to the show, gentlemen, to both of you. Guys, we've got about 20 minutes to have a chat, and then I'll take an ad break and then 10 minutes after that. So let's get straight into the meaty bits. And I suppose the most obvious question is, what is cryptocurrency, Dean?
Sure. Look, I mean, it's really, really easy to overcomplicate the narrative, right? You know, people are confused enough as it is in the financial system. So, you know, we try to make it as simple to understand as possible. So crypto in itself really is just a medium of exchange. In other words, you know, the way that people trade and barter, you're assigning a value to something for an equal value in something else. And that is essentially the trade or the medium of exchange. So obviously, what we want to try and understand here is, why are we looking at it as the new money? And we're looking at it as the new money because the current system that we have is essentially broken. It's backed by debt and very much controlled by financial institutions. And the trust, which is basically non-existent in the current financial system, is brought to light in crypto, because crypto itself is secured and backed by what people are calling blockchain. It's very important not to confuse the two. Blockchain is the technology, or cryptography, which is the methodology. And blockchain basically essentially delivers trust into cryptocurrency as a medium of exchange. So I hope that explains that side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually wanted to bring in Scott, because I think you raised a super, super important point just before we continue around the importance of crypto, especially in the relation to the deficiencies of our current monetary system, you know, based on what we call fiat or really printed money. Skulk, we've had this chat before on my show, the Big Daddy Liberty Show, and you went into a proper descriptor of the weaknesses of fiat and why it's important that we look at alternatives. Talk to us very briefly. Let's maybe quickly re-have that conversation. We're seeing the failure of fiat currency across the world, aren't we? Where countries are printing more money, going into serious amounts of debt. In fact, I was mentioning that before the ad break, looking in relation to the Americans right now, and the whole sort of stimulus package that Donald Trump has been pushing out, which is essentially printing money and giving it to people. And South Africa is also a good example. I mean, we've had a president who announced that, hey, I'm going to spend 500 billion rand on quote-unquote stimulus. And a lot of people wonder, where is this money coming from?
Yeah, hey, I'm very glad Dean is here to earth it. He had a more coherent explanation, I think, than I would come up with this early in the morning. I think one of the big things basically about normal currency that people need to understand is that it is centrally controlled. Currency is one half of most transactions that we do, right? But its production isn't really understood by a lot of people. Like, how does it actually come into being? And the one major benefit that the major cryptocurrencies have over the fiat system is the fiat system is controlled by a very small group of people who can make arbitrary changes to how that system works. And cryptocurrency does not have that flaw. So cryptocurrency can't be controlled if, in fact, one of my definitions, at least for what a blockchain is that it is open access and it isn't centrally controlled by anybody. And the kind of guarantees that gives us basically is that if we earn money, nobody else can dilute that money and take a part of the property that we basically have represented in that money away from us without our consent. That's really the absolute cutting edge, improvement that the currency part of cryptocurrency has brought.
Guys, I think anybody who's listening is probably thinking, okay, we get it. We get the notion of a cryptocurrency. We get the technology that drives it, of a blockchain. But the practicalities, like, I am investor Joe in Brakpan right now. I've worked for 40 years, and, you know, I've got a pension, and, you know, I've paid off most of the other stuff, right? So the bond's done and blah, blah, blah. So I've got a little bit of extra cashola before retirement. And they're thinking, is Bitcoin just another share then that I can just throw a few rands in? Or what is the full spectrum of uses really for cryptocurrency? Dean, I'm going to go back to you first on this one.
Right.
But Investor Joe, he's got 5,000 rand per month. Why should he put a bit of cash into crypto?
So here's the thing. And this is something that most people looking at crypto, number one, it's people are afraid already. So when you're trying to get them to understand crypto, that what they're doing is they're looking at Bitcoin. Why are they looking at Bitcoin? Because Bitcoin is the big brother, or rather the grandfather of crypto. And so everybody's going, cryptocurrency is Bitcoin. And the big thing here is that is a myth. It's 100% a myth. Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency, but it's merely one type of cryptocurrency. It's essentially called a store of value. So if you were to look at what Bitcoin is the gold, essentially, the store of value of the crypto space. And of course, it's very volatile. It's volatile because people are buying and selling it, and the prices are based on order books, supply and demand, etc., which is normal with gold. So the one thing to try and understand for any investor trying to put money in, firstly, don't put any money that you cannot afford to lose. So that's number one. And number two is trying to understand what is crypto. So crypto, I've obviously explained it, in terms of its intrinsic value and how it becomes valuable from a trade and from an exchange perspective. But so there's a volatile currency in crypto. So you look at something like Ethereum, which changes in value based on the moving of the market, and people are too afraid to put their money in because they think that is crypto, but that's not the truth. The truth is that crypto, you have your levels of risk. You have your high risk, which is something like Ethereum. You have your lower risk, which is a cryptocurrency that can be backed by an asset, i.e. if you have $1 million worth of gold, you should have $1 million worth of that cryptocurrency, and that price will be based on that gold backing. Or you can have what is called a stable coin. Stable coin will be a coin that is backed by and pegged to the dollar or the rand or the yen or the euro. And that does not fluctuate. That is based on the dollar or that price of that currency. What is very important here is to know whatever your risk is, whatever your risk profile is, you can get into crypto and maintain that risk profile without the worry of volatility. So someone who has 5,000 to spend, I'd say crypto is the way, as long as you understand that you can move between those currencies and limit your risk as you need to.
And again, Skulk, Dean puts it so perfectly. I was going to say, when we had our chat, you made the major point, I think, and this is what really piqued my interest at that time, that, firstly, this definitely is something that's moving towards the future, especially as we watch monetary systems across the world, especially in the more weaker countries, collapse already. I mean, for example, Argentina, once again, very recently, filed for bankruptcy as a country, because again, they reached that point of no return where you can't borrow to the hilt forever and expect a secondary society of productive people to bail you out for your bad decision making. Crypto, as you and Dean have mentioned, offer large protections to those very same productive people I speak about insofar as storing the value of what they've worked hard for in these currencies. And Dean broke down the different types, didn't he? But I wanted to sort of add on to the conversation. Let's use that same example of Farmer Joe. I don't know if I should call him Farmer, but just Joe, nonetheless. And he has this $5,000 that he wants to put away. Everything else is paid for. He has this $5,000 that he can lose. Let me put it that way. And he says, okay, cool. Part of what I'm doing is to take this money and call it a rainy day fund. So it's some form of savings. Number two, take that money, and if anything happens in the country of lockdown you stand, where he lives, and he needs to flee the country, how accessible is this money really to him if he has to leave lockdown you stand in a hurry?
All right. Okay. So there's a couple of questions in there. So the first thing on, let's say Joe the farmer, right? Actually, some of the most sophisticated investors and business people I know are farmers. let's just say basically like we have somebody who's already got quite a bit of a retirement fund and so forth. One of the best descriptions of cryptocurrency I've heard is that it's a schmuck bet. You know, you basically take a small amount and you bet that things are going to go sideways. And I think that we now are in the position where things have gone sideways. I think that it's no longer as unknown whether or not that's going to happen. Right. So, my take on the thing would be that, as we increase the supply of fiat, right, the prices of most things will rise and the value of that fiat will drop. That's just my view. I can't really, like, I'm not qualified, certified by our overlords to give investment advice. So I'll tell you guys what I'm doing and what I'd do if I were in Joe's situation, right? I would not necessarily worry about paying off debt at this stage simply because of the amount of money that's being printed. It is absolutely astronomical. Right. I wouldn't necessarily like go overextend myself into a situation where I can't service that debt, but I wouldn't worry about it because as they devalue the rand, so they by default basically pay off everyone's debts as well. What I'd be doing with the 5,000 rand or however much it is basically at this point is I wouldn't necessarily be looking for stability as much as I'd be trying to check out myself. Now, in my view, the two major currencies that I want to be in, again, I can't speak for anyone else, I can't speak for Joe, is I'd like to be in Ether and in Bitcoin because those two form the basis of this new economy. And in terms of your question about how accessible those things are, you can buy them through, we have two very, very good exchanges in South Africa. We have Luno and we have the incredible Valor, run by Farzal Mashani. It's really a very cool cat to have on your show as well one day. But you guys can basically register on their exchanges. It's super simple to get money in there and to actually like buy cryptocurrency there. But then what I would recommend is that people stick to those two. Don't go buy esoteric weird things that you don't understand. Just try and understand those two first, right? Yeah. Until you understand a next thing, please don't. This is my view. I wouldn't necessarily go buy it. There are thousands of these things. The vast majority of them, unfortunately, are scams. But a few of them are truly, truly worth, I want to say worth their weight in gold, but I suppose that doesn't really track if something is virtual. In terms of the accessibility of the thing, once you understand, once you've bought some, there are many methods that you can store it for yourself. There are, for instance, these things called hardware wallets. There are paper wallets, which is basically a thing that you can print out and keep offline so that hackers can't get to your system. And that's really like those more advanced, they call it cold storage methods. Those are the methods that I would tell people to employ. And effectively, as long as you have access to those methods, you have access to your funds. So if you can access the internet and you have one of these methods and your money is on the blockchain itself, then it is incredibly unlikely that people will be taking your money, and it is incredibly likely that regardless of where you end up outside of Lockdownistan, you won't be able to access your money. You should be able to access your money pretty much under all circumstances there. Yeah.
Dean, I'm going to come to you with the same question, really. You know, like because I think for a lot of people, it's an issue of peace of mind, isn't it? It's the idea that, look, if I've worked hard, and I've done the right thing, I've put savings aside, and I've got a little bit of cash to put away as let's call it a rainy day fund or whatever, right? For whatever reason people want to save or just have money available, they look at crypto, and Skulk has mentioned a couple of examples that he likes, and I want you to do the same on your front. They look at crypto, they put some money in that, but now they're worried. What if Lockdownistan collapses and we have some communist dictatorship take over and debase the value of Lockdownistan? You know, will their money be available once they flee Lockdownistan to another country, for example? And talk to me about what you would do as Joe, the farmer.
Sure. So, Skulk made a few great points. So I'm not going to reference, you know, the hows in terms of how you store it, et cetera. So I'll just, you know, from my perspective, I've been basically 100% in crypto for the last 2 years. So for me, when I say 100% in crypto, we earn in crypto, therefore the money comes from crypto, and when I need to use it for paying specific bills, I can transfer it through Luno, and then it comes into my bank account, and I can pay my bills. Easy peasy, right? And the other side of that is that in certain countries, you actually have access to that capital, or working capital rather, assuming you need it, using a debit card. So there are cryptocurrency debit cards, which which generally you would convert your cryptocurrency into whichever currency or fiat currency that you would be spending. And wow. that would be another methodology that you could, use to actually spend the money or to access it. But that being said, in certain jurisdictions, for example, South Africa, we aren't really fortunate enough to have access to those cards just yet. So I had to obviously go about getting it in another way. On the other side, that being said, when I say in another way, there is a company called, and I'm not touting any companies, and I'm not, because they have nothing to do with me, but it's one that I've used, which works really, really nicely. And of course, liabilities aside, ePayments.com. They're currently going through an AML restructuring, so that will be accessible later. But one must really, and I speak back to my points about the types, and I do appreciate what Skulk says about, right now you shouldn't be worrying too much about paying debts and looking at Bitcoin and Ethereum as your main drivers when getting into crypto. But at the same time, when people are getting into crypto, there are two sides to it. There are three sides. You're either going to win, you're either going to lose, or you're going to keep the same amount of money that you had before. And that talks to those levels of risk. For me, what I would do, if I only have 5,000 to put aside each month
Yes. Sorry. Can I cut you short for like 3 seconds?
Yes.
I need to take a quick air break, pay my bills. When we come back, we look at exactly that, what you would do with that 5,000.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
And we are back on the Big Daddy Liberty Show. My name is Big Daddy Liberty. I'm your favorite fat boy. We're having a lit conversation, as the young ones say. We're speaking to Mr. Skulk Dormel, an investor in Bitcoin, and of course, Dean Cannell, who I am actually currently in conversation with. He is the CEO of Coin Fabric. Dean, I disturbed your train of thought, but you got to the meat a bit around.
I'm this
fictional farmer that we've been talking about, Joe the Farmer, and he's looking to invest now. What would you do if you were in his shoes?
Yes. So, with all the risks understood, of course, buying into crypto, we can make that as easy as possible. Luno.com makes it extremely easy to buy. Getting in, as Skulk said, into the two big brothers of crypto, being Ethereum and Bitcoin, one understands, yes, that is a method to get in, and that is obviously a specific entry point that everybody's getting in on, regardless of their risk profile. But when you do understand that if someone only has 5,000 to spend each month, they may not understand the risks enough for that to be worthwhile for them as a risk. So for me, in my personal opinion, what I would do is I would take a third of, let's say two thirds of that 5,000 and put it into a volatile cryptocurrency in order for you. When I say volatile, I mean the Bitcoin or Ethereum form of volatility, which is moving with the market, because they are the two primary coins that hold the most market cap. And then I put the other third into a stable coin. Now, a lot of people have their opinions about stable coins, such as Tether, and what are they backed by. But traditionally speaking, if you look at something like Tether or USDC or any of the bigger stable coins, you've got a chance to have some form of risk mitigation by having a stable coin as part of your portfolio. If the market dips, that currency does not dip. And so therefore you have the capital to continue playing with if, for example, Bitcoin and Ethereum do hit a volatile point and the market drops. So for me, I would say take two thirds and play the market. When I say play the market, put it into the market in something like Bitcoin and Ethereum, which are always going to grow with the market when the market grows. However, again, we must understand they're also going to dip when the market dips. And then the other third into something stable. So not only do you still have money to put into the volatile ones again if you want to, but you also do not lose everything that you put in. And then your rainy day fund is not going to go to a much lower value because you've already got some stable and stashed away.
Okay. Guys, I'm in my last 4 minutes here. I did say this interview would be very short, but to my listeners, I am going to have these guests on my longer podcast as we unpack these conversations in a deeper sense. But this is just a taste, really, for you, the dear listener. Guys, the last 4 minutes, I'm going to give each of you 2 minutes, really, to sort of almost in a sense, give you a final word, but someone's listening to this, they hear the rationale, they hear, they can equate themselves to our example that we gave of Farmer Joe, but now they're thinking, okay, what do I do? I'm scared, I'm worried about where lockdown stands, / South Africa is at the moment, you know, in terms of our macro finances and the economy. Obviously, you know, crypto isn't in their here and now, in terms of what they think about in the here and now, right? But how do you position it as an asset, a tool, a means they can use in that here and now that I speak of, to not only protect their wealth but also give them something they can, save with? Scott.
Okay, sorry. Just repeat that question for me again. How do they do what in the here and now exactly?
With South Africans worrying about their here and now in terms of their finances and the economy, how does cryptocurrency become another means, another avenue for them to protect their asset base and to protect their money?
Well, okay. So first of all, Ramaphosa can't make exclamations. President Ramaphosa, excuse me, can't make he can't just basically say there should be more cryptocurrency. So it preserves your purchasing power in that regard over the long term. And secondly, it can't be controlled. There's no CEO of Bitcoin or Ethereum to call and say, freeze this guy's account. Those are the two major benefits at the moment.
So it definitely safeguards one's assets. I mean, once you're in, you essentially, no one can plunder your cash. Dean, I'm going to come to you with essentially the same question. You know, like there's a South African right now listening to us and going, look, this sounds a bit weird, sounds a bit different, I've never heard it before, but I hear the value of it being able to safeguard my currency, my money and the like. But is it really practical? Can someone right now literally say, okay, cool, I'm going to throw R1,000 a month into this? And if so, where should they look?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, you can buy a fraction of a Bitcoin or a fraction, which is called a Satoshi, or a fraction of an Ethereum. And what you can then do is, you know, you've got the choice. You're either going to store it, and you can store it in a hardware wallet, as Skulk said, which is very important to understand. Obviously, we can get into that for hours. But the other side is just to really, you know, I think if you look at what I do, and I am, as I said, 100% in crypto, and I look at the future of money. If you look at the current system, you've got to understand that the future of money is probably where you need to start looking at, and I believe personally that is crypto in whatever form. Getting in is quite easy. Go to luno.com and you can buy in, and then what you can do is either store it or use it within the system, i.e. exchanges, transfer it. You can manage it the way that you need to without any control. And then you can also use it by, you know, transferring it back to Luno and back to your bank account. So you do have that control. But if you look at the future and you look at the monetary systems now, I believe that crypto is definitely a place to consider as a risk mitigating opportunity in the current financial system.
Fantastic. Thank you so much to my two guests, Dean Cannell and Skulk Dumel. Before I let you guys go, Dean, how do the people find you online or just contact you?
Sure. I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn, Dean Cannell, CANNELL, or go to coinfabric.com and you can drop us an email.
Fantastic. Skulk, how do we reach you, homie?
All right, yeah. So you can just basically follow at Skulk Dormel on Twitter if you want. If you think I sound crazy now, you should definitely follow my Twitter feed.
Fellas, thank you very much to my guests, and thank you, dear listener, for you know, following this conversation. It can be a bit tricky, it can be a bit of a weird one because it's so new. But again, these are voices who I'm going to have on the show a bit more, and including other voices in the crypto space. After the break, we wrap up the show and we look at what the news will be holding for you in the next week.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. The last sort of 5 minutes of it as I wrap up the show. It was a very interesting one. Again, for me, this conversation is one I've had with these guys for the past 3 years now, and you know it's been a serious eye opener for me, mostly because you know a lot of us just don't understand what crypto is, and you need guys who are in it, who are actually immersed in it, to explain the value and the power really behind crypto, and how, I mean, we all call it the future, but I think it's the now. I mean, there are people right now in this space, and I think extend my kudos and thanks to my two guests, Dean Cannell, the CEO of Coin Fabric, and Skalk Dormael. Guys, my last thought. I think as we head into the last week of this hard lockdown, the quarantining, we need to be very mindful and very vigilant as citizens that we don't get bamboozled by the terminology, the lingo, and the excitement, the perceived excitement of the hard lockdown being relinquished, essentially. What you need to watch for is the effects of this hard lockdown, and even the various now stages of lockdown that are being proposed by the state. Will your business recover? Will your personal finances recover? These are questions I think politicians need to be very mindful of in their decision making, and you've got to be involved in that decision making. Don't be a passive recipient of what politicians tell you should be done. Your voice has to be the loudest voice in the room, not that of political parties, not that of your favorite politician, whoever that may be, but your voice, the individual, you, the families, the South African families that make up the fabric of the society. Because I can tell you now, around the world, we're seeing the very dangerous shift towards more authoritarian ways of organizing government, as they call it the new normal. And that sort of rhetoric is now sort of flowering in politics around the world. So that'll be my last thought as I look at the news week and what will be happening in the next week. You have to be a conscious participant, a critical participant in what's happening at the moment. Get involved in the socio-political life, especially as we see now this quote-unquote new normal being proposed by politicians. So things to watch, of course, very briefly in my last minute, is what provisions the state is going to be making in these different levels. Is it going to try and control everything, or is it going to let you just go straight back to work and only make provisions for social distancing, masks, you know, good hygiene, etc., etc.? Like, those are the two those are the two areas we need to watch out for. Is it a case of the securocrats in government trying to control everything, or is it a case of the constitutionalists in government who say, look, the economy is open, but these are the only provisions it would ask you to take into consideration in order to flatten the curve and to keep everything, to prevent the health system from being overwhelmed. Because we all agree on that. We all agree on that. But what we shouldn't agree to is the loss of freedoms, the loss of our liberties, simply because of a fear of this virus. We cannot allow that. We have people who literally gave blood for the freedoms that we enjoy today in this country, and we must preserve and defend them, even if it's against your favorite politicians. So that'll be my last word on this episode of the Big Daddy Liberty Show. Remember, you can find my content on all your social media spaces. Just follow Big Daddy Liberty on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or look for the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I mentioned, I will be recording the Friday podcast. I do a podcast every Friday, and that'll be out perhaps later this afternoon. We do look again at Bitcoin and, we do look at cryptocurrency in greater detail as we look at the political ramifications that may see cryptocurrency overtake fiat currencies around the world. Guys, thank you so much for listening to your favorite Fat Boy Big Daddy Liberty. I will see you next Friday, and a big shout out and thank you to my producers, Craig and DJ Flo, for another fantastic show. Guys, Shabbat Shalom, and I will see you next week, Friday.